Last Sunday, we talked about money from the book of Proverbs, and I don't have any money to give you today. I know, we just took up the collection, right? No refunds. but I have something that God says is just as good. A well-spoken word at just the right moment is like golden apples in settings of silver. To an attentive ear, constructive criticism from a truly wise person is like an earring or jewelry made of fine gold. And so it's my hope today that I can share some well-spoken words and you can go home with a metaphorical basket of golden apples. So just think about that. What is a well-spoken word? What is a well-spoken word? And the answer, if you've been here through the series, is fairly simple. It's the product of wisdom. The right word at the right time. But there are several other traits that were given in this passage of Proverbs, and we're going to be spending most of our time in Proverbs 25 and 26, if you want to turn there and sort of follow along. And so we find in this passage several traits that help us determine whether a word is the right word spoken at the right moment. In verse 13 of Proverbs 25, and so these are verses 11 and 12 up on your screen, and the very next one is verse 13, and it uses a bit of a silly word picture. Okay? Like a snow-cooled drink at harvest time. Some translations just say like snow at harvest time. Now, snow doesn't really come in harvest time. If you're looking at late summer, early fall, certainly in Israel, it doesn't come at that time. So it's very hypothetical. What we have here is really a picture that we would see in our advertising on television. You know, where you pick up a cold, frosty drink on a hot day and suddenly everything turns to ice. And so the Hebrews, the ancient Hebrews, didn't have a way of having, of keeping, of storing or creating ice during the harvest. Okay, think about that, all of us that have ice makers in our refrigerators. No way of cooling a drink in the heat of summer, in the heat of a hard day's work. What I find interesting about this, though, is that they could imagine, right? They could imagine, they could be out there in the field, and then they take a break, and they come over to where their food and where their water is, and they sit there with their cup of water, their bottle of water, and they say to themselves, if only I had a handful of snow to put in this drink, right? And so perhaps they are picturing something like this, a big block of ice that we could chop into chunks and cool our drinks. And as refreshing as that thought is, of ice in a drink on a hot summer's day in the middle of harvesting a field of grain, Proverbs says, so is the confidence of having a trustworthy messenger. Now, we perhaps have a little trouble initially relating to that because we don't use messengers very much. I mean, it could be talking about the postal service. Could be talking about UPS or FedEx. You know, like if they're not trustworthy, then we have problems, right? Even today. But it's really talking here about somebody that hears a message, is given a message in one place, and then comes to deliver that message. And if you get it accurately, that's important. If it's to do with a battle that's taken place. And the messenger comes and you want to know, did our army win or lose? And there's consequences if the messenger gets that wrong. It could be that the messenger went to sell something and comes back from the market, or something's happened and they deliver the news. But if they deliver it wrong, if that messenger continually delivers the news wrong, then it's worthless, right? But there is something refreshing, something comforting and relaxing about knowing that the information that you receive is accurate. And in that sense, I think it's very applicable to today, right? There's this thing out there in a world where we're highly reliant on public media, that this thing you may have heard of called fake news. Right? And there is so much fake news out there, so much news that is filtered through different perspectives and different lenses, that by the time it arrives on our screens, in our newspapers, on the radio, whatever it is, however we get our news, by the time it arrives to us, our confidence level in using that news as the lens through which we should understand the world around us is severely diminished. We live in a society where we have to double check everything we hear, and even then it may not be enough. Doesn't today's media often seem to place greater importance on sensational headlines and clicks and views and advertising revenue than accurate, in-depth reporting? And so while a good messenger will reliably report the events that have occurred, the flip side of that is that the unreliable person, who's all talk, no action. You know some of these people as well, perhaps. They may make up stories of past events that didn't happen. Or they boast of the things that they're going to do. Perhaps they're going to do them for you, and then never follow through on those words. And so in contrast to the gold apples in settings of silver, the talk of this unreliable person is cheap, right? That's one of our proverbs. Talk is cheap. But Proverbs wants us to know, the sages who collated this want us to know, that not all talk is cheap. Okay? That is not a true statement, absolutely. Sometimes talk is cheap, but not all talk is cheap. Because some talk, a word, a right word spoken at the right time, is anything but cheap. It's valuable. It's like a golden apple in a setting of silver. So we continue, we see that the wise person speaks with integrity. Proverbs 26 contrasts this person of integrity by describing the foolish person. Sending a message, we're told, by the hands of a fool is like cutting off one's feet or drinking poison. Like the useless legs of one who is lame is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. Proverbs doesn't sugarcoat things very much, in case you're wondering. And so we see here the negative aspect. When the person who is speaking has no integrity, then the message is just wasted. In verse 9 of this same chapter, we get this entertaining description of a fool with proverb. We're told, like a thorn bush in a drunkard's hand is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. And so That's a little strange, but if you can picture someone who's drunk, walking or wobbling down the street, carrying in their hand a thorn bush. Who knows why they're carrying a thorn bush, right? They're not in control of their senses. And so, oblivious to what's going on around him, oblivious to the time, to oblivious to the other people in the presence, he's swinging this thorn bush. And in the process of doing that, he hits other people. He causes hurt and doesn't even notice. And I think today, if the sages were to write this proverb, they may have a description that says something like a drunkard driving a car is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. And so what we get out of this is that good words in and of themselves are not enough. Okay? It's not enough just to say, oh, well, I know these proverbs. It's knowing the right time, the right person to speak them to. Because good words have a power to hurt when spoken by someone with poor judgment. And so, we see that in verse 7 up there, like the useless legs of one who is lame is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. Because this is the fundamental nature of a proverb. In the mouth of someone with no integrity, someone with no tact, the wisdom is useless. It's like going to a funeral and telling the grieving family members, well, God says we reap what we sow. It's true. Right? It's true. Or perhaps we want to quote Proverbs 22:6 to a parent whose child is caught up in drugs and addictions. If only you'd raised your child in the way they should go, they would never have departed from it. This is your fault. Like a thorn bush in a drunkard's hand is a proverb in the mouth of a fool. And so that's why I like this translation of verse 11. It's coming from a translation called The Voice, which is not a real common one, but it draws our attention to the timing of the well-spoken word. No one likes the person who's always there after the fact to say, I told you so. Couldn't you see that was going to happen? That's pretty obvious. Like, what did you think? We don't like that person, do we? And so we get this thought coming out of there that there's more to being wise than being right. Okay? There's more to being wise than being right. As we move through this text, we see that well-spoken word must also be spoken to the right person. Okay? We can't just take verse 11 and overlook verse 12. The two go together. Because a well-spoken word needs to be spoken to the right person, to an attentive ear, to someone who is willing to listen. Because to that attentive ear, constructive criticism from a truly wise person is like an earring or jewelry made of fine gold. And so, the wise person is not only the one who talks, but also the one who listens. In verse, going back to chapter 25, in verse 15 of that little passage there, it provides a summary of the power of our speech, the power of what we have to say. And all of this comes together. It says that through patience, a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone. The softest part of the human body can break the hardest, the strongest part of the human body when it's applied wisely. In Ecclesiastes, you don't have to turn there if you don't want, Ecclesiastes 9, verses 13 to 16, the teacher, the writer of Ecclesiastes, tells a parable. Perhaps it's real, we don't know for sure, but it's at least a parable. And he says, I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man, so I said, wisdom is better than strength. But the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are no longer heeded. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. So it's an interesting little story that we're told here that we don't know quite how this wise, poor wise man, what it was that he said or did, but it was through his wisdom that he was able to turn back this king of a great army. And, Ecclesiastes is a little negative in its outlook on life, and so the lesson that the teacher takes away is that although there's a lot of value with poor wisdom, he wants to say it's better if a rich person has wisdom. It's more likely to be written down and remembered, like this book that I'm writing. Because he doesn't even say what it was that this poor person, poor wise man said to the king, right? So we don't know what his words were, but it was effective. My words, on the other hand, because I'm rich and influential, are being recorded. And so that's kind of his point. But we see this story as evidence of the truth of Proverbs 25:15, through patience a ruler can be persuaded. And the tongue, a gentle tongue can break a bone. And so the army turned back. And it took time. It wasn't just, oh, here comes an army, send the poor wise man out to talk to them. They surrounded it, they laid siege, they built earthworks. This would be a project that would take months. But through patience and wisdom, the army was turned around and the city was spared. So I've shared with you a bunch of proverbs. And you can look, we read from chapter 17 earlier. And then we've looked here at chapter 25, a few verses there. Chapter 26, a few verses there. And you can go all through Proverbs and find verses that relate to the way we speak, to the way we use our words. But I want to try and summarize these, just what we've looked at today, try and summarize them a little bit in a way that's easier for us to remember. The first thing here is just that we remember the powerful influence of wise words. Sometimes we may find ourselves in situations where we think there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can say. And Proverbs wants us to say, no, stop. Think about it. Like don't rush into that situation. But there is power in wise words. Wise words can encourage. They can advise, they can correct, they can counsel. But these wise words must come from a person who lives a life of integrity. You ever had a stranger come up to you? And maybe it happens at church, someone you don't know very well. Maybe you've put in a prayer card and you said, hey, I'm struggling with this. And this person you don't know comes up and says, oh, look, I know what you need to do about that. Maybe it's something that's like related to, we had a rash of kidney stones lately, right? So somebody comes up and says, hey, do this and you'll never have another kidney stone in your life. And you're like, who are you? Why should I listen to you? And so the only way, like you can be a person of integrity, but the other person has to know about it, right? A wise word to somebody who's listening, a life of integrity lived amongst other people. And when we have that relationship, when we're a godly, dependable, reliable person, then we have a right, we have a opportunity to speak wisdom to those around us. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 18, Jesus himself taught that the things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. So our words come from our heart, and our heart has the capacity to defile the words. Whatever our words may be, however wise, we could be quoting from Solomon himself, but our heart, if it's corrupt, will make that wisdom corrupt also. And so, although we can take all the advice of how to speak to the right person at the right time, in the right way, in the right place, at the right opportunity, and we do everything right according to the book of Proverbs, if our heart is not in a place where we have relationship with God, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, if we're not there, if our life is inconsistent with what we have to say, then our words are wasted. And so we're reminded that the book of Proverbs itself is all about this never-ending journey to develop character. It's not trying to change our behavior, although there's lots of advice of ways that we can change our behavior, change the way we speak. It's seeking to change our character over the course of our life. And our words may fool others for a short time, but ultimately they will reveal our hearts. So remember, the power of wise words. Second one I have here is that true wisdom is sensitive to the circumstances of the other person. Maybe you know people. I mean, I think there's all sorts of people in our media that do this, but maybe you also know people in your workplace, in your family, and just in your life who take pride in telling it like it is. Right? And they'll warn you, they say, look, I'm just going to lay this out here, but I'm telling it like it is. The sages who wrote Proverbs would describe that person more like a fool than a wise person. Their words may be right, but if they're not considering the impact of the other person, the impact of those words on the other person, then those words are more likely to destroy and to harm than to heal and build up. So true wisdom is sensitive to the circumstances of the other person. Then the third one I have here is just as blurting out truth with little thought for its ramifications is seldom beneficial. Some people may choose to adopt this philosophy. Well, I'm not going to just tell it like it is. I'm not going to tell it at all. I avoid all sorts of trouble that way, right? Never put my foot in my mouth. Just keep it shut. People think I know more than I do. And so, mostly in Proverbs, we've looked at verses that that discuss how to talk. But the same principles really apply to silence. silence is not really a greater virtue than words. Okay? There's a saying, goes back a long way to some unknown person, that if your words can't improve the situation, stay silent. Right? Your words can't improve the situation, stay silent. But what that says is that words can improve situations, that words have value, and that we should be seeking to use those words. And if we go through life thinking that silence or uninvolvement is the way to make things better, it's not. In that proverb that I just said, it's the words that make things better. It's the words that improve the situation. Now, it's aware that words can also make the situation worse. So weigh your words and be silent if you're going to inflame the situation, if you're going to make people angry, if you're going to cause problems. But words, silence in and of itself is not a virtue. There comes a point when it's foolish and even sinful not to speak up. Let me give some examples. When we see racism, we need to speak up. When we see or experience abuse within a family, we need to speak up. When we witness injustice in our community, we need to speak up. And so, this verse, it's amusing, and at times it's appropriate. But look at the verse just before it. It says, those with knowledge know when to be quiet, and those with understanding know how to remain calm. You see the difference between wisdom and ignorance? Wisdom here chooses the time when it's best to be silent, when it's best to be quiet, when it's best not to put fuel on the fire. How did that happen? As opposed to the fool in verse 28, where it's just don't bother talking. Okay? Don't bother talking. So the wise person chooses the moment to talk, and the fool, it's better not to. Wisdom, grounded in relationship with God, knows when and how to speak in a way that benefits the people around us. The sages simply encourage us to think before we speak, because wise words are powerful words. These judgments, these decisions we have to make, when to speak, when not to speak, is it the right time, is it the right word, is it the right person? They're all judgment calls, aren't they? And we're going to mess them up. And that's why wisdom is a never-ending journey. Because we learn from those mistakes, I hope. That as we think back and we reflect on why did that situation in my marriage get worse? Why did that situation in my family get worse? Could I have said something? Should I have said something? Did I say too much? Like we analyze that and we try to apply those lessons in our lives. But if we just read Proverbs as a whole, it's like a tidal wave of information and it can overwhelm us. There's so much to think about. But there's hope that we can all grow, all change in this area. We need to keep in mind the Proverbs wasn't written to make us feel inadequate. That's important. Proverbs wasn't written to say, hey, we're the wise men, you're the dummies. Okay? This isn't wisdom for dummies in a yellow-covered book. You know, this is sages, these wise people that care about those they live among, saying you too can grow in wisdom if you choose to pursue it. In the greeting of, as we come to the New Testament, in several of Paul's letters, he tells the churches that he's praying for them. He writes and says, hey, you know, just thinking about you guys, wanted to pen you a letter, as I'm sitting here, I'm praying for you. And among the things that he's praying for is that those churches receive wisdom. And so one of the reasons that I'm spending this time and going on this series of wisdom literature from the book of Proverbs is that it's my impression that wisdom is undervalued in today's society. And that we don't talk about it. If you're in growth groups, I think it was the first week, and I said, have you ever complimented a child because they're showing more wisdom than they used to? And usually we compliment them because they're taller, because they're faster, because they're, you know, getting good grades in school, because all sorts of things, but we seldom compliment them for being wise. And yet the things that we choose to compliment people about set an expectation and a direction in life for them. If you compliment a child about the way they ride a skateboard, you're encouraging them to keep riding that skateboard, aren't you? You're really good at it. If they're playing basketball and they have good moves and you compliment them in that, you're encouraging them. Keep working at it. You never know where this will take you. Schoolwork. And perhaps unwittingly, for many, particularly for girls, their appearance. You're so pretty today. Keep working at it. Keep investing in that prettiness. And you'll accomplish, perhaps, great things. Or people will admire and respect you because of that. Or admire you, maybe not respect. And so what we compliment is what we value, and we establish these values for people around us. And so when we omit wisdom, then we omit something important as one of our values that we pass on to other people. And so I love that Paul, when it comes to the church, when he says, I'm praying for the church. He says, I'm praying that you grow, and one of the things I want you to grow in is wisdom. Wisdom from God. James seems to have the same idea in mind when he writes his letter. But he encourages us, saying, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. There's a couple of things in there. One is that if you lack wisdom, yes, that's me, right? Because it's a never-ending journey. You should ask God. And then I love this next phrase, and it's part of a bigger context, but it says, God gives generously to all without finding fault. Right? If woman wisdom, who we met at the beginning of Proverbs, is sort of God, and then we say, oh, I really need wisdom, I don't have any. You ever done that? You ask somebody for a loan, perhaps a family member, something's happened, and they say, yeah, I'll give it to you. But you know, if you'd been saving better, if you hadn't bought all that coffee, if you hadn't eaten out that much, if you'd bought a cheaper car, then you wouldn't be here today asking me for this loan, but I'll do it for you. Right? And don't you think that God has that right to do us? God, will you give me? Well, I'll give it to you, but you've made some really dumb decisions in your life. Right? And I feel like you need this much, but I'm not sure I can trust you with that much, so I'll just give you the, you know, a cup instead of a gallon of wisdom. And but God gives us wisdom without finding faults. I think that's a wonderful picture. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God. So I want to just throw this out. Will you make this your next step this week? Will you pray regularly, daily even, for wisdom? Now, I think sometimes we do that when we're choosing a new job, trying to decide whether we should date this person or not. At those big decision moments in life, before a final exam, it's like, God, can I get a download of wisdom, please? But what this is asking is just, God, in my relationship with you, I want to take your values and I really want to learn how to apply them in all the situations that I find myself. I want to make better daily decisions in my family. I want to make better daily decisions in my home, in my workplace or school, in my relationships. I want my decisions to reflect you. I want woman wisdom to be infused into my life. And so will you pray this week for wisdom if you haven't before? And particularly in the way you speak, right? Because wisdom's a big, broad thing. So this week, will you pray for wisdom in the way you speak? That you use your words to build others up, to be constructive, rather than to destructively tear them down. I'm going to stop there. But maybe you have conflict in your life. You have things going on where you know that your words haven't been wise. You know that you've caused hurt to others. Perhaps you recognize that you gave bad advice. You passed on information that was untrue. And you haven't gone back to remedy those circumstances. So I want to encourage you to, where you are now, to confess that to God. You don't have to come to the front. Just do that in your pew. Confess that to God, that the way you've used words has been hurtful. And then it may be that this week you also have to follow up with someone else and have a conversation. It's unpleasant, but that's the wise, the right thing to do. But if you would like the church to pray for a situation that you're going through, that's struggling, then we would like to do that. We want to encourage you and support you. The Proverbs are written to communities. We're not intended to learn these lessons in isolation. There's at least a teacher and a student and often reflects the life in a village or a community. And so if we can help you to live a life of righteousness, a life of wisdom, then we would like to do that. If you're feeling distant from God, perhaps because of the way you've treated others, then come and talk with me, share that, and we'll pray with you. We'll do everything we can to bring you closer to God today and in the days to come. You have that opportunity to share with the church as we stand and sing together.